Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. Therefore, I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. In each episode, we'll walk through my expanders, a term in my manifestation formula signaling the people that already embody, have, or are successful in what we are looking to call in. These are the people that we witness through our mirror neurons on a subconscious level that expand us into knowing that our manifestations are possible as well. Especially when we hear about their background, their upbringing, their trials and tribulations, and any of their pitfalls that they had to experience along the way. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us our review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifestor that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. Welcome back, guys. So today I want to talk about something pretty important to manifestation, and I never really talk about it in content. It was something I would focus on with clients a lot, but now that I'm not seeing clients, let's chat about it in here. So one thing we have to be very, very clear on is what archetype we're projecting from a subconscious level. Many of us are probably familiar with the old paradigm of manifestation, the think positive and visualize, which I call New Age rhetoric, because it didn't really result in much for me and, you know, much of my community. One thing that they really teach is manifesting in the conscious realm, right? It's a lot of spiritual bypass, you know, it's like pretend to be what you want, think of the, you know, and it's all in the conscious space. And what really makes this so different is because we are completely acknowledging, working with, and shifting our subconscious, which many of us have now realized that's where we're actually manifesting from, you know, that imprintation. So one thing I want everybody to get really clear on while we are in this DRE challenge, again, if you're just tuning into this and joining in, and it is November 2018, hop on the train of the DRE challenge. You can find that on the blog, you can find it all over Instagram. We even have it when you click on the Instagram link. So you can definitely find it. And one, you know, little gift that we always give, I mean, it's different every year, that I always give a gift at the holidays. Just again, to reiterate, we have one this year in November, $100 off the Formula Magnetism Workshop, which is what teaches you how to actually manifest. It's very important. And that code for that workshop is upgrade, which is UPGRADE, for $100 off to join us in the DRE reprogramming challenge, because the DRE, which is the daily reprogramming exercise, is inside of it. So while you guys are on this challenge and you have been sending me so many messages of like, oh my gosh, day six, I couldn't even imagine like how much has completely shifted and come up in clarity and awareness. Now, you know, really getting into it, you're starting to see, whoa, what's down there. One thing I want everybody to take a look at is what archetypes are you projecting down there? Get clear on it. Because no matter how we dress in the world, how we physically look, our age, our gender, our sexual preference, our race, it does not make a difference in manifestation energetics. What we project from a subconscious level makes all of the difference. And it's what evens the playing field and makes it all democratic. So if outwardly you're trying to express one thing, but on a subconscious level, you actually believe that you're another and you're projecting that, there's a mismatch and people aren't tuning in to your magnetism as much as they could be. You're also not connecting as far as you could with your aura as you should be to be magnetic. So an example of this is when I was in my 20s and I was acting and modeling, I felt like I had to fit into the mold and the box of being the hot chick. It's just kind of where they stuck me and they saw that they could market me. So I really tried to formulate myself to look like that, dress like that, be like that, live that. But it was so opposite, like a polar dichotomy to who I am on a subconscious level and what I resonate with. And so it was not resonating. Like in auditions in the world, I had all these body image issues. I mean, just things were a mess. And what I really identify with on a subconscious level, if I'm really honest, it's more like it's like a 007 French man who's maybe a womanizer, kind of in his feminine, mixed with, you know, a very mold-breaking woman. So I'm very clear on it now. I dress like it now. I honor it now. And I really project from that place and people really see and receive it. They see me entirely. So what you want to do during the DRE is you really want to get in touch with what you're projecting. And while you're going through the questionnaire, just kind of start to ask yourself, on a subconscious level, who do I see myself as versus what I'm presenting in the world? If the two feel mismatched and wonky, it's time to get them unanimous. And of course, on the subconscious level, you need to lead with that version. Now, it's not a permanent version. Say you have low self-worth from childhood, so you identify as all of these things that you don't actually want to present with, and they aren't your true authentic self. The perfect workshop to work through this would be the authentic roadmap, so that you can really get in touch with who your true authentic essence is. And it also takes you through the reparent for it, so you can really connect back with it, also through shadow and the DRE. And so this is really advantageous as well for anybody who identifies as a different gender that they were born as. If we're projecting all of this pain and shame that society's laid on us, because are we like, it's 2018, guys, come on, is this still a fucking thing? Jesus. We have to go down on a subconscious level and align the two and be projecting from that energetic. I also really want to communicate this to my community who falls on the spectrum or who has been told, you know, that you have a disability of some sort. It is really important that you aren't identifying in the conscious realm with what does not feel like a label that fits you. I have some wonderful people in the community who have messaged and, you know, they do have these labels. And I really want you to get in touch, if you have that capability, to get in touch on the subconscious level to really see who you actually identify with. Is it an artist? Is it, you know, like you heard my archetypes, they're not conventional. And then you need to get in touch with that authenticity and be projecting from that full place of love and confidence. That's what's going to get people to be like, whoa, I can't take my eyes off of you, no matter what human you are. So this is a really important thing, because everybody who is doing the formula in magnetism this month with us, we're all calling in our 2019 manifestations together. This is such an important energetic component to align before 2019. So you really come out strong. This also goes for a woman or a man who identify with those, have never felt empowered. It's all about the subconscious. It doesn't really matter what you're saying on the outside, how you're presenting. Maybe you're angry. Maybe like you're involved in politics, whatever your thing is, unless you're aligned on the subconscious level and empowered, it will never resonate and it will only push people away. So that's my big note for today. Take that through the challenge. Get that aligned while you're calling in these 2019 manifestations. And regardless of what you are on the subconscious level, it's awesome. It's rad. It deserves to be in the world. And the moment that you really believe that, nobody will ever mess with you about it again. Sending you my love. Today's guest, Katie Delbout, she's become one of my really close friends now. I first had the pleasure of meeting her when I was on her podcast, Let It Out, earlier this year, I believe it was, which was a really in-depth and amazing episode. If you haven't listened to it, please go listen to it now. Her podcast is amazing. She brings in very eclectic people. She has a beautiful perspective on life because she's recovered from an eating disorder. She is so humble. She is so honest. She's doing the work and she's really manifesting so much. You can tell because one of her main prerogatives right now is she's helping other people start podcasts. She was incredibly instrumental in us starting this podcast. By the time we had out the 13 episodes, we're well on our way to 500,000 downloads, 500,000. So I cannot recommend her enough. I cannot recommend her course enough. It teaches you everything from sponsorships, how to start a podcast, how to structure a podcast, what to do with guests, like down to bringing presents, you know, when you interview people. She's incredible. She's also just, she has a beautiful book called Let It Out that's all about journaling. She is the go-to journal guru. So if you are looking for amazing prompts, how to dissect life, how to dissect this work deeper, please go check out her book. And I'm going to let her do the rest because this is an incredible episode. You're going to find it very expanding. If you want to be an entrepreneur, if you have struggled and you're in any type of recovery, if you're curious about intuitive eating and what that looks like for both of us, we go all over the place in this. It's awesome. Stay tuned and you're going to love it. Welcome to the Expanded Podcast. We have Katie Delbout. Am I saying that correctly?
Delbout. I always say just like about.
Delbout. Yeah. Katie Delbout is with us here. She is the founder of Let It Out podcast, which I've been on. If you haven't heard that, please go listen to that episode. We go pretty deep in that one.
Yeah, it was long.
It was long and great. She's
Barley
also the author of Let It Out, which is a book totally dedicated to a journaling practice, developing a journaling practice, different ways to journal. And Katie has become such a good friend of mine. She's a fellow projector and Taurus. Sun sign for anybody who's curious, but you've become such a good friend. And last time we were in New York, you were like, the DIs don't totally work for me all the time. So I've kind of created my own process of NLP and journaling through it because I have to see it analog. And I said, oh my gosh, I have to get her on this podcast so she can expand you guys into what that process could look like for you when you're doing the workshops and maybe the DREs aren't taking you deep enough. So we'll get into that later. But first, if we want to finish the lunar hair, then I'm going to go into your background.
Okay, well, let me just, I'll just tie that up in a bow.
Great.
There's some calendar you can go to online that will tell you the lunar haircutting days that, like, there's one for strengthening, there's one for lengthening. I don't really know if
what's
I'm like
the site?
So,
do you remember?
It's like Moroccan method or Morocco method. I'll send it to you. Something like, if you Googled like lunar haircutting days, that's what I, when whatever I do it, that's what I do and it comes up.
So last December, that's when you did it.
It was on one of those days. I have my next hair appointment on one of those days.
Next December.
Yeah.
This coming December.
Yeah. Like I kind of do it around. I mean, I don't know. It's not really working fully for me, but that's a whole nother article that I actually recently wrote. But
wow. Yeah. Well, you just wrote a great one on The Fullest, which everybody should go tune into when you're listening to
Thank you.
And the title is?
I think it's called like how hairstyles are how we hide, which you really were the impetus of, like, you know, when you stop hiding in your life, like when you start to be more authentic in my emotions, it kind of made me think, oh, I think I want, which is something we've talked about at length before as friends, but how I wanted to be more authentic in all areas of my life, including how I dress, how I am on the internet, how I wear my hair, which is why I stopped dyeing my hair and I stopped cutting my hair. And the biggest thing for me really wasn't about dyeing or cutting it. I have textured hair that I've blown out and I've always used a straightener or curling iron my whole life because this wasn't the norm where I grew up. This wasn't, I've always felt like it was too much or I wanted to have straight hair. And so I, you know, hid, but if someone poured a bucket of water over my head, it would like coil up and I would be myself. So I wanted to get rid of that. And anyway, so that's just been a whole unveiling of that over the years, I guess.
Let's segue that into your childhood. Give us your cultural background, your upbringing, your parenting modeling, the whole shebang.
Yeah. So I grew up in a small town in Michigan. It's a college town, but without the college, it's really tiny. And I have loving yet, you know, family it's the greatest source of love, but can also be the greatest source of struggle. And Amen. And so I always say that I was raised on an adult farm because my mom is one of six and my parents divorced when I was pretty young. And I was raised by all of my aunts and uncles. Like they're all still in East Lansing where I grew up. And so, yeah, you know, I'm also an only child. And I think that's really informed me and how I interact in the world and how I, you know, was really caught in my head and as a way to get out when I felt sad or when I felt uncomfortable, I would go into fantasy. You know, mm-hmm. that was kind of like my first coping mechanism. And mm-hmm. then, you know, I got into using food and controlling food and using a bunch of other things in my life. But my first one was like fantasy of being out of my body, mm-hmm. thinking of other things.
Same. That was me. It might be very trajectory only child as well, because I was an only child until I was 13.
Yeah.
And I was the same exact way. You touched on it briefly for a moment, but I think it's really expanding for this community who has struggled with body issue. I mean, who hasn't struggled with a body issue whatsoever on the planet from masculine to feminine. But I know that you are deep into or are on the other side of recovery from eating disorder. If you could touch on that for us.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's so many different ways of thinking about recovery and eating disorder recovery. And I'm so not an expert. I'm just a cheerleader. It's what I say about journaling and all the other things that I've gotten into. I'm just learning and I happen to grow up on the internet and share what I'm learning on the internet as I'm learning it. But as far as recovery, you know, I think it was a way for me to differentiate myself. I wanted to leave where I grew up. I wanted to be autonomous. And I felt, you know, I was very stuck and I didn't know how to get out of that. And so I hid by trying to make myself different and trying to eat in a different way and control. It was really like a really huge way to control. And so when I started, I got very, very underweight. What happened was I studied abroad and I gained a lot of weight the first 2 years of college because I really didn't like it. I really wasn't happy and I was numbing myself through food. And then I went away to study abroad in Spain and I had such a great time. And for the first time, I was making my own choices around food. I was feeding myself and all of the weight that I had gained came off probably in more and some. And then when I got back, the interesting thing was I got so many compliments from people and I got addicted to that. Yeah. I got addicted to like, oh, this is something that I can control. This is something that I can
be loved for too.
Yeah. And so that was when the master cleanses started and all of the things. And it got really, really unhealthy and it got really, really scary and everyone was really, really worried. And then, you know, after going through some recovery, and I'm so, so grateful for that whole thing that it happened because it got me into therapy mm-hmm. at a really young age. And where I'm from, I didn't know anyone in therapy. I think my mom went to therapy once and was like, oh yeah, I talk the whole time, you know, like I think it was just something that like I didn't really know about, that people didn't really, I didn't understand. And so this got me into it. So I was able to contemplate my own existence. I was able to have self-awareness. And so that was really great. But then the interesting thing about recovery is that like my weight was somewhat restored. And then I went right into orthorexia, mm-hmm. like hard, where mm-hmm. I was just like, okay, I got this. I just need to eat more avocados, mm-hmm. or I just need to sit on my hands and I need to eat this very specific way. And then eventually that led me to intuitive eating and mm-hmm. it led me to body positivity and it led me to all of these other ways of thinking of like, oh, looking at, you know, weight as a social issue and mm-hmm. looking at weight as a feminist issue and looking at it a way that we literally try to make ourselves small and tiny and denying, you know, we have so few sensory pleasures in this life and mm-hmm. food is one of them. So to deny that is really sad and really mean to ourselves and not good for anyone. And then also food is a source of pleasure and taste, but it's also connection. Mm-hmm. And community. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I really had to learn and bring back into my life. And so at the end of college was kind of the height of all of this for me. And luckily I'm in therapy. Luckily I end up moving on and moving out to a different city and alone by myself for the first time, learning how to feed myself. You know, my career was in this malleable place. My life was in this malleable place. My relationships were in this malleable place because everything was changing. And I had to learn how to be an adult. And it was kind of this moment where I was like, okay, I can go all into this, or I can stay with what I'm doing and try to struggle here forever. And luckily, I had some really great expanders that mm-hmm. helped me to move out of the way I was with food. And
what did that look like for the people who are tuning in and looking from a manifestation perspective?
Yeah.
Not that that should be the sole perspective of recovery, but using it as one of the tools yeah. to help support their recovery process. What did that look like for you?
Well, I had a couple mentors who talked about intuitive eating and talked about looking at the ways that we feed ourselves and the way that we eat, getting out of the diet mentality mm-hmm. that, you know, all day long we're getting messages from society, from advertising, telling us to diet.
And now then wellness.
Then wellness is like also taking that message and hijacking the message of anti-dieting, essentially, and putting it back into diet mentality. And, you know, I like a green juice as much as the next guy. However, knowing that you're not bad or wrong for having a drink or enjoying food or going out to dinner and like all of these things that I like just wasn't doing because I was so rigid and I was so dogmatic. And I think that is a projector thing too, that I, you know, I can go down the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. I can go down the wormhole on something when I want to. And I did that with wellness to a fault. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was diversifying my interests, like mm-hmm. diversifying what I was into. I stopped listening to so many wellness podcasts and exactly. wellness stuff. And I like got into comedy and I took an improv class and I was like, what do I even like outside of like researching gluten-free, vegan, sugar-free, totally. Raw recipes at 3 a.m.? Like, what am I even into? And I started writing. I started, you know, journaling was helpful, but I really just diversified my coping mechanisms. And I had these great expanders. And one thing I learned, and I think I've shared this with you before, is that they say this in eating disorder recovery, but the only proven way to improve body image mm-hmm. and body dysmorphia is to look at images your size or bigger. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't look at them as beautiful, but to just expose yourself to
them. Yeah, the mirror neurons and neuroplasticity.
Exactly. And so by doing that, finding expanders, and I didn't have that term then, mm-hmm. but role models is what I called them then, in my real life of people who are aging beautifully and just people who I loved and I wasn't so associated with the body. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, I really have to thank you for. You said this to me, I think last time you were in New York, of, you know, you really see people as energy mm-hmm. and you don't really see what they're wearing or what they look like.
Or their physicality in any way. Like, I don't care what race, gender, whatever. I see yeah. their energy. That's it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, knowing you and knowing how loving you are, and this is just a new thing that's been helpful. Cause again, when we talk about recovery, like it's an ongoing thing for me. Like I have days where I'm like, oh, I really got the combination right that day. Like I ate a good amount. I felt satisfied. I felt pleasure. I felt community, and I feel really good and happy in mm-hmm. my skin. And there's other days where I don't eat enough or I eat too much or I don't feel good or whatever it is. And so it's, you know, it's constantly figuring it out. It's just like being a person in the world.
It's a practice.
Exactly. It's totally a practice and remembering to come back, just yeah. like in meditation. But a recent tool was what you said of like, you don't see people as what they look like on the outside. You, and again,
it's not that I don't see, because that can be so offensive.
Yeah.
I literally, once you put on the lenses of only tapping into your gifts or energy, once you put those on, it's like glasses you can't take off. So it's like, I can see. I mean, if somebody has a broken arm, I see
right.
it. But I also, it means nothing. All that I'm really picking up on is their energetic projection, where their worth is at, what they want, how they're navigating this. So yeah, just so for the people listening, that's the clarification.
Yeah. And just knowing that helped me to keeping that in the back of my mind. Maybe for people listening, it's helpful to hear that, is like, oh, none of this shit matters.
It really fucking doesn't matter, man.
In the scheme of things, we're all going to get old. My body's going to change a million times. You know, some of us might have babies. Some of us might, you know, I broke my arm this year. Mm-hmm. I ended up in the hospital this year. I had kidney stones. Like, nothing will make you just appreciate your body like having a goddamn kidney stone. Totally. You know?
And the magic of it, of being able to heal and pass them and all of the incredible magic that goes with that.
And it's just like those sorts of things, like the days where I'm just like, oh, my clothes fit weird, or is the shirt okay? Or it's like, you know, we're here, we're connecting with people, we have a limited amount of time, and to just not overthink those types of things, which I have to remind myself every 3 seconds, but it's been helpful.
There's two things I want to unpack in that for the person who's listening, especially the manifester. It is so paramount in manifestation to, and it's a practice. Like, we've really been hammering home, because we send out a survey of people who might be stuck and aren't manifesting. I'm like, I must be a masochist, because I'm not the type of person who's like, if one person's manifesting, I'm happy. I'm like, if one person's not manifesting, my job's not done. And so we're really trying to ingrain that this is a practice. It's a practice. And what I'm about to say takes practice and time, but we will have everything we want. Literally, it can be so fast and so quick on the physical plane, on the energetic plane, when we can literally take the masks off, the labels, and seeing the world in the physical and begin to see it in the energetic. So what you're saying, and the fact that you're absorbing that just from a conversation that we had, and you're really taking your own exploration of what that looks like for you and what that feels like in your life for you, that's when you can start to really understand the diagnostics of manifestation. When we don't see this table, or you know what I mean? Yeah. When we see like the energetics of how this table got here, that's really like the, and so that's one thing I just want to touch on. But what I want to unpack together for a moment for the person who may be in recovery, obviously, please be doing that process with your professional, and please be doing that with your group and who you're using through that. But I had to learn what it meant. And it was when I really started to deepen my energetic gifts of what intuitive eating means. Forever, I would hear this thing thrown around, intuitive eating. Yeah. And I'm like, you use your psychic powers to eat? I don't get it. And then I just started doing it one day after I really understood what being a projector meant, where it was like, no, I need to literally have a complete education, media, nutrition, like complete detox, a subconscious clearing.
Yeah.
And I need to actually tap in with my body every day and every meal to be like, what nutrients are you craving? Yeah. What colors, what food, what vitamins do you feel you need? Okay, cool. What food is that in? And it's crazy because right now my body is more to its authenticity than it ever has been, because I don't listen to any of the bullshit out there anymore. I literally just check in. What type of movement do you want today? Cool. Or what are you? And it's like all summer long, it was like, I need artichokes and squash. And it would tell me exactly what it needed. And I'm getting so close to being almost totally healed. I would say I'm like 90% there.
Amazing.
And that's such a huge component of it. So I want to hear your thoughts on that and your words.
Well, there's this great book called Intuitive Eating. Okay. That really breaks it down. And I had so many great expanders. Isabel Fox and Duke is a great expander who came in at right at that moment I was starting to talk about. And she, where I was like, okay, I guess I'm quote unquote weight restored and I live on my own, but I'm like up to my own devices. Like I can eat or not eat right now. And like, nobody's going to know. Like I had this moment of like, I have to choose what I'm going to do here. And so Isabel's work was meaningful to me, and my very good friend, Christy Harrison, who has this podcast called Food Psych, at the very same time. And it's interesting, she had me on her podcast during this time. In 2013, we started our podcast around the same time, and we did like a swap cast. So you can actually hear where I was then, just starting intuitive eating. And, you know, I was 23 years old, like just really getting into this. And essentially what it is, it's like you've had years, we all have, of dieting, essentially, of like whether it's through a wellness vein or whether it's through just like someone else teaching you these messages about manipulating your size and shape on the basis of weight, you know? And it's taking away all of those messages. My dear friend Simi Bodich also teaches this work, and she came into my life. We became friends around this time as well. And just seeing her, like, she again was an expander of, like, I would look at her food and be like, oh God, that looks so good. But like, I don't eat that. Like, and I was like, why don't I eat that? You know? And I had to just really little over little, the model of intuitive eating essentially is making all foods on limits. So nothing can be off limits. And there's, you know, the fear with that is that you'll go, and I'm definitely not an expert in this, I'm just a, again, cheerleader, but if you're like allowed to eat all the ice cream, you'll eat all the ice cream, and then, you know, you'll feel horrible, and you'll do that every day. And you might do that a little bit at the beginning because it's new and you've been like sitting on your hands for years, but kids are intuitive eaters, you know,
really, so
it's just like getting back to how we were as children and unprogramming all of that diet culture. And diet culture is everywhere. I mean, I was at Erewhon last night and just hearing like the newest diet.
I can't anymore.
And it's like that in New York. It's like that, you know, it's starting to be like that everywhere as it moves, you know, from the coast. And it's just, you know, diet culture is so pervasive and it's constantly there. And so to unprogram that, to deprogram that, it takes time. And so like, I find, you know, I'll be like, oh, I'll eat that thing. And like, we talked about this, I think, when we had lunch once in New York, where we were just like eating something that was really nourishing. We were kind of like, oh, I feel amazing. I feel great. I used to think that that was a bad food combination or that this didn't work with my body or this
The food, come on, all the things.
All the things. So much. And like, I did all of them.
I've done them all. From raw vegan, I've done it at everything.
Yeah. And it's so, isn't it liberating to just live like this?
Well, it's also
like,
just French.
Yeah,
like at
exactly.
The end of the day, it's European, you know, and in Europe, aside from like the supermarket culture becoming really big there, and they are starting to get obviously more toxins and Roundups and things like that. Primarily, everyone's quite healthy for the most part, you know,
which is literally like, it goes back to my story when I was telling you, when I studied abroad in Spain, I came back and I was just good.
Yeah, like, you're
and
like
it was
normal.
Just because I was, and it wasn't because I was on a diet. It was much the opposite. My best friend was making me avocado on a baguette in the morning, and I was having gazpacho, and I was like going to the boqueria and having fruit and vegetable juices, and I was just enjoying my life and drinking a ton of sangria,
totally,
and just having a great time. And I think happiness is like, when I'm really happy, my issues with food just go away. I turn to it, and this is an interesting thing in intuitive eating. They talk about this for people who are dieters or who have been chronic dieters. Our tendency when we're sad, when we're uncomfortable, is to turn to food. Where people who aren't chronic dieters, when they're sad, they don't eat.
Yep.
They don't want to eat.
Yep.
And so it's reprogramming our brains to, you know, look at food as not just nourishment, but also connection and community and all these wonderful things. Yeah.
While we're talking about this, just for the person who's like, oh, light bulbs, you know, for this moment.
Yeah, this can be very jarring to people.
Yeah, and
different.
Just like, like, whoa, this is an invitation to try something.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing, and I'm sure the book and all of that really covers this, that you had already mentioned before, but A, really being able to decipher from your taste buds too, because when you start to eat a little bit cleaner, before your taste buds were very addicted to all of these additives, you know, these flavor additives, and you know, our brain is so addicted to that and recognizing that. But I'm assuming a lot of people tuning in, you know, are at the point where they're eating a little bit cleaner, so they're detoxed from that taste bud addiction. Yeah. One thing that I really tune into all the time is how I feel after I eat. Obviously, it's so basic, and I know that's covered, but it's like, no, I feel really tired and lethargic and laggy. Our body really, really communicates those things to us. And also, I just want to say this for the person who manifests, when you start to get into these practices and read the wonderful book you just suggested, and you start to play with this, it is so liberating, because at the same time, on literally a neuroscience perspective, you're reinforcing not only just your eating patterns, because you're reinforcing basically the way that you behave in the world, you're also reinforcing, this is so important, your intuition and listening to pings. You're listening to your body, you're listening to the sensories of your body, which is how we receive our intuition, our downloads. So it's a two-part practice. It's so important for manifestation as well.
Your term pings, like that's essentially what intuitive eating is. And my best friend Simi talks about how when she started intuitive eating, she started living more intuitively.
Yeah.
You know, like you're able to take this and know that, like, you know, there's this great quote, and I'll send it to you, and I'll try to cite it right now, but it's by Ellen Satter, and it's a quote about what normal eating is. Mm-hmm. And she says that normal eating is eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full most of the time. And it's sometimes eating more than you wanted to because it was so good and warm and in front of you, mm-hmm. and fresh, and feeling a little overstuffed and knowing that's okay. And sometimes it's eating less than you wanted to because you didn't pack food or whatever, whatever. Hers is much more succinct than I'm doing it. And knowing that's okay too, but knowing that you always have access to food, nothing's off limits, that is normal eating. And like my boyfriend, he's just a normal eater.
Yeah.
There's a very few people in the world who haven't gotten caught by the diet culture, mm-hmm. and told that we should change and manipulate our bodies. But a lot of people are just normal eaters. Mm-hmm. They eat when they're hungry, they stop when they're full. Sometimes they're over full and they're like, oh man, I ate a lot of pizza. That's okay. They don't beat themselves up about it. It's like, it's just not a big deal. Whereas like for me, it's like if I, you know, would eat something that didn't feel good, I was like, I was out for the day. And then you spiral. Then it's like,
body dysmorphia.
Okay, well, I ate that, so I shouldn't eat this later. Yeah. Or I ate that, so I'm going to just keep going.
Because
diet starts tomorrow. Yeah. So you just like keep going down the wormhole. And then that's problematic because it takes a lot further to come back from that.
Yeah.
So it's just like it's just being gentle with yourself and being present. It's really, really present.
Checking in with yourself constantly.
Yeah. And if you're not being present and knowing that like emotional eating is okay too.
Totally.
Like it's not.
And also if you do it, just do a DRE around it too. And not that that's the solution, but it's also going to take you into such a place of awareness of like, oh, I'm associating that I'm eating this because of this. You know, you just get that awareness, that consciousness around it as well.
And like a DRE and journaling, I talk about that too. It's like, there's like coping and solving, and it's like sometimes it's okay to turn to the food because in the moment that feels really good and nourishing. And then at other times it's like, you know what? I really want to figure out what's going on here. Yeah. I really want to do the exercises from therapy, or I want to do my DRE, or I want to journal and figure out what's happening. But other times I'm just like, I'm so tired. I want to eat some chocolate in my bed and drink some tea and watch Netflix and tune out. And I don't want to be in my body.
Especially like during the luteal phase.
Yeah. And it's like, and that's okay.
Anytime.
And
then,
but eventually like you stuff all that stuff down. Like I just posted about this on my Instagram. Like eventually it's like having a rock in your shoe. You can go on for a while with it and pretend it's not there. But eventually like you're going to need to like dismantle, take your shoe off, untie it, stop. It's annoying. It doesn't make it any less annoying going through that process, but it's going to make the rest of your life a lot easier if you just deal with the rock.
Absolutely.
Through a
when
DRE,
you're ready.
Through your tools.
Through your tools, through the tools that resonate. Another thing too on what you said as well, and of course I'm zero of an expert. I've been on my own process, you know, like I would say I'm a recovering model.
it's
same thing in a way, but I call it out too with Max, like when we're working really hard and I haven't been doing my self-care or whatever, I'll be like, I need to go and eat my feelings tonight. We're going to go get Mediterranean. I'm going to eat a shit ton of pita and hummus, and I'm going to like make myself feel so cozy in there. And then that night I can't digest and I know I'm done, you know, because I listen to my body on both accounts. And it's just so beautiful getting in touch with your body's needs when you need it.
Yes.
And like I like to also say too, something I've really noticed with intuitive eating as a projector, especially like really understanding the human design around it. Yesterday, like for the last, when I'm home up in, you know, Mariposa, I don't have a lot of stimulation. I don't have a lot of checkouts. I don't have things that are stressing my nervous system. So I'm so intuitive in that. It's just a flow. I don't even think.
Yeah.
And I cook for myself only because there's nothing healthy around.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that. So while I was home, I really wasn't eating that much because I was eating what my body was asking for when it was asking. And it wasn't about the amount. I was just listening. But when we got back here this whole week, yesterday, I noticed that I ordered this huge like bowl of, from Honey High. It's like rice. I needed black rice. And salmon is what my body was asking for. And I ate the whole, something I would normally only be able to finish half of because my body would say I'm full. And yesterday I needed that for energy to keep up with what was going on. And I think just listening, being able to, and this is for the person just curious, like tapping into those cues and knowing it's all okay. And to really explore your intuition around it. And you can't fail. Like there's no failing.
Totally. And it, being flexible. Like this
flexible.
My dear friend Semi talks about this all the time. Like, it's different every single day.
Yeah.
Like, and you were talking about like with your period and the moon and the seasons, you know, like all of that. It's different every day. And I'm someone, and Jenna told me this, that I can eat the same kind of thing every day.
Me
like
too.
I know what I like. I kind of know what works for me.
Same.
But then there's days where it's like I'm traveling or I'm home or like, and not being hard on myself. I'm like, oh, I ate a totally different amount than I normally eat.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Totally.
And like, I think it becomes problematic and it becomes really sad and hard is if you ate the Mediterranean and beat yourself up
totally
about it, you
which
know?
I used to do and
yeah.
now it's nothing like that. I'm like, oh, I eat some ginger and I know next time
it's fine,
maybe not.
It's like, and we're like, we're in bodies, we're not gonna, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Totally.
You know, like there are, it's a coping mechanism, but there are worse coping mechanisms.
Absolutely.
I kind of look at my life as like I have this gaping hole, you know, we all have one.
Yeah, everybody.
And I fill it with food sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I fill it with control. Sometimes I fill it with work. Sometimes I fill it with
TV.
Yeah, tuning out. Sometimes, you know, and other people fill it with drugs or alcohol. And like, that hasn't really been my thing, but
yeah,
like, it very easily could have been,
totally.
You know, like,
absolutely.
It's whatever's most cozy to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just like acknowledging, like, I'm filling the hole or I'm trying to, like, you know, let the whole be. And
yeah.
I'm just sitting with the whole. And it depends on the day and on where I am at with being able to do that.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode. I want to hear, what was your biggest rock bottom in your life?
Okay, I think I've had a couple. I think I have had a bunch of little ones, and I'm sure I'll probably have more. But the one that's kind of the main one that I've talked about a lot, we've kind of touched on, it was at the end of college when I found myself really addicted to self-help and personal growth. And I was reading every self-help book, every diet book. And I remember this moment that I've talked about before where I was standing in a Barnes & Noble and I had a gift card. And I was in the self-help section as usual, looking for the next, you know, and it wasn't just books. It was like the next blogger, the next self-help guru, or the next teacher, the next mentor. I just wanted these mentors so much. I was like, they look really happy. They're in a happy relationship. They like themselves. I'm just going to do what they do. I'll just eat what they eat. I'll move to the city they live in, mm-hmm. and I'll be great. And so I was looking for everything outside of myself.
Yeah.
And then I pivoted out of the self-help section into the stationery section, mm. and I bought this colorful journal.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody told me to journal. Nobody said that it would be helpful or useful. I didn't know how to journal. I didn't grow up someone keeping a diary or contemplating my existence like at all. I didn't. It just wasn't what I was doing. And that summer, I spent time alone outside writing down how I was actually feeling, mm-hmm. and what I was thinking. And it felt like a really big bottom, but eventually, you know, it became this way for me to be authentic and be real for the first time, maybe ever.
Mm-hmm.
I was, and again, I was just doing it with myself in my journal because there was no fear of judgment. And even with therapy or with someone safe, like a friend or a mentor or a coach, there was always this fear of judgment there because I'm a people pleaser and I wanted to be liked. I wanted, you know, I was always like, I'm so sorry, but how I started everything. But in my journal, that was gone. I was able to just like completely be myself. And so that was kind of, that was one big bottom. And then more recently, maybe about 2 years ago, sometimes you frame this question of like crying on the floor.
Yeah, that's totally. Yeah.
Well, I literally had that.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I kind of go in these like 2 year cycles of things for me. And it was this moment where I had moved into a new place. I was still living in Michigan, but I'd moved into a new place. I had just written this article for Refinery 29 that talked, it was about anorexia nostalgia, and which is a whole thing that it like got picked up by Vogue and it got picked up by like, it got a lot of comments and traction. And it was this moment where I got a hit of dopamine. You know? Yeah. And I was like, I don't like how I didn't know this then, but I was like, I don't like how much I like this. And
it
also,
was the new form of coming back from Europe and being like, you look so great then.
Exactly. Yeah. I never made that connection, but it was exactly that. And the interesting thing was this book was about to come out like a few weeks after that. And so I had this like moment of, you know, I had this article come out, which at the time like felt like a really big thing. And then because of how it was received, and I was getting messages from people I hadn't talked to in years and months and like since I was a kid saying,
you're like, I'm validated finally.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And then this book was coming out and I was like, and I had even my lovely editor said something to me like, okay, you know, we're all good with the last edit. Tomorrow you'll be a star, something like
wow.
that in this email. And I was like, and you know what happens when you see your book in Barnes & Noble? Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, totally. Like, everyone has this goal. Happens. I'm going like, to get it in Barnes &
totally.
Noble.
Like I got all the, and it's kind of like, use it. Like I got all the things I thought I wanted. Yeah. I was like, all I wanted was a book deal and for this person to write the foreword and this publisher. And it was so, it was all the things I wanted. My 22-year-old self really, really, really wanted. And then I was there at 25 being like, oh, it's not this, but I got all these things. What is it? What? And I had another article that was supposed to come out and my editor was like, you're just really not ready for this next article. Like you're writing, you need to work with someone. You need to maybe go to grad school. Like you're just, you're not there yet.
Oh God.
And I remember we had this beautiful kitchen table in my old apartment because my old apartment was huge because it was in Michigan.
Yeah. It was like free. Yeah.
yeah. And so
compared to New York,
crawled underneath the table and I just started bawling on the floor.
Wow. That's your test. The universe was like, are you good enough?
Totally. Yeah. And then a few days after that, the day before my book came out, like I met my boyfriend. I ended up deciding I was going to move to New York and things started like really changing.
You were in a magic dark.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I just want to highlight that for the person listening. That's what a magic dark feels like. You get slapped with, yeah, you sure? And then you were like, oh, I can't take it. And then there you go. Everything started.
A lot
to
of
roll.
Tears, a lot of just like, did I make the right choice? I'm here. But it felt like, and if this is something you can clarify of being a magic dark feeling, it felt like forward movement.
Yes.
Even though it was hard and challenging, like I felt like this isn't what I was expecting. And like, yeah, my mom thought it was cool to be able to see my book there, but like this wasn't what I thought it would be. But it still feels like me hitting this bottom feels like it's going to be okay.
So we have a whole workshop coming out in December about this because people never understand what's going on with those energetics. And we're so cute to be like, why am I moving forward? But I literally feel like I was just run over, you know, and what's going on there. So I like to call that the like one final test. It's in the magic dark, the universe is like, is her nervous system strong enough for what she's been asking for this next level? And on top of that, I'm not going to let her get away with not being authentic, because the only way to be in your full magnetic power is to knock you back into your true authentic self. So you had those two epiphanies happening at that time. You had the epiphany of like, whoa, am I strong enough for this next phase? I mean, I don't even know if you were conscious to it, because we're usually not conscious when we don't understand the energetics of manifestation. But B, you also had the thing like, who the fuck am I? I just got everything I wanted, but it's not like the full completion of energetics of who I am and what I know I need deeper, you know? Yeah. So just for the person listening who might be in that space, that's what was going on there. And it so beautifully outlines that feeling for the person who might be struggling there right now.
Yeah. And it's self-awareness too. Like, I think that's the biggest thing that journaling has helped me with. And that, and when you said that too, like, I'm definitely more aligned than I was then, but I think we're all like, I'll have the most self-awareness right before I die, mm-hmm. you know, like that mm-hmm. sounds bleak, but I think we're always moving towards self-awareness. Yeah. And where I am now, there in my favorite movie, there's this line where he says, about every 5 years, like clockwork, I realize how much of an asshole I was like 5 years
before. Oh my God. Yeah.
And it can be so uncomfortable, but it's something I always think of. And it's like, I'm constantly learning and growing.
Everybody.
And I think I will be until I die.
Everyone should be.
Yeah.
And nobody's a master.
Yeah. And you tell this great story. I've heard you tell this before. I think I got it from you about how the queen, you were in a cab with the person who brings the queen.
Yes.
Maybe purpose. Have you told that on this podcast?
I don't
already?
Remember, but you can. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I literally got this from you. You maybe said it on my podcast, but the you were in a cab with the person who delivers the queen, the box that tells her what she has to do
the
every
red
day.
Box. Yeah.
And she says that she'll never stop. She told him that she'll never stop because it's what keeps her going. It's
her
the purpose.
Yeah, yeah. That humans need purpose. That's what I believe is the key to life. And I think that whoever out there, we're all just students until the day we die. We're all so just kids at the end of the day,
yes.
until the day we die.
Yeah.
So thank you for saying that too. I think is really important. But is there more to finish on the crying on the floor in the rock pile?
Well, I mean, it's just funny how much, like, the next thing for me was that I was like, okay, well, I got all these things that I wanted, but it's because I don't live in New York.
Yeah.
It's like, all I wanted to do is live in New York. And it's like, it's because I live in Michigan. I really want to move to New York, blah, 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 blah. And then I did that. And then the same thing happened. Like, it's like buying a new shirt. Like, you like it for a couple of days. It gives you that hit of dopamine, or publishing a book for a few days, or eating the big Mediterranean thing, or whatever it is. You get this hit of it. And then after a couple of months, I was like, oh, you know, it's that cliche, but so true. And I think it's like a Rumi quote of wherever you go, there you are.
Wherever you go, know? There you are. And the most important outline of it, like everything on that journey that you've been talking about, it's really, really seeking exterior validation inside of yourself, you know? And so I think that's so beautiful that you're outlining that.
Yeah.
Biggest inner child belief that you had to shift to get where you are today.
Well, I think, to be honest, I'm still working through this, and you know this, it's kind of a shadow thing, but one of the things for the people listening, you already know this because I'm such a consumer of your work and such I'm a fangirl of Freya Native.
You're just in it for you. I mean, you're just in it. I always tell people it's just a reflection of what you're wanting in your life. So thank you for saying that.
Oh, no, it's so true. But you say this great thing, I'm quoting you to you, where it's really great to let your shadow out to people who you admire.
Or that you fear so much would judge you.
Yeah,
it.
Totally. So you're one of those people. And also we're live on two people's Instagrams. Yeah. And
no, going back.
Here, yeah. So, and we're recording it. So this is helpful medicine for me.
Yeah, let the shadow go.
Yeah,
let's
great.
Do it.
Here we go. That's what they say about a good interview. It feels like therapy. So
good job. Oh, interesting to know.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So the two biggest things as a kid, I didn't feel like I was pretty enough or smart enough. Mm-hmm. And everything else kind of falls underneath those umbrellas.
Those are the roots, yeah.
Yeah, and so I remember there being time tests. Did you have those? Like the timed multiplication tables or whatever. And I just was so horrible at all of that. And I, under pressure, I'm terrible. Like I just wasn't really good at school in general. And I never felt like I was smart enough. I didn't feel like I was cool enough. Like I was one of the few only children at my Catholic school. I always thought, if I just had an older brother or sister, all I wanted was an older sister. Like that was like, I would be okay. And I had these older cousins that I just like clinged on. They were my first expanders. Mm. Like I wanted to talk like them and dress like them and do anything that they did. And I just didn't feel like I was pretty enough. Again, my hair didn't look like the other kids. My mom was one of the only like working moms, and I just felt different. Like we all do as kids. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't I was in my own world thinking I was the only one feeling this way, but I know now that I'm sure everyone was in their own way. But I, you know, my nose was too big. I also like developed really quickly. So mm-hmm. I looked like how I do now in about like seventh grade and then just like stopped. So, like my boobs got this big and then just stopped. Like, you're good. Yeah. So I just like, I always felt different. I wasn't good at sports. I wasn't, you know, I just was like, I didn't have my thing, you know, mm-hmm. that's why, like with human design, thinking about like, if someone had been like, this is your thing, you're good at this. Mm-hmm. I would have been like, oh, okay. Focus here. Like I never really felt like I ever found my thing mm-hmm. until honestly after college when I like had, that's why like nobody, everybody doesn't need to have a book deal to show them that you don't need a book deal. But like for me, it was good. Cause I was like, oh, I'm worthy. Like I can actually do something. Like I never thought I could write a book.
I have a thing.
Yeah. And so I think my getting over like not feeling pretty enough, not feeling smart enough, like proving to myself like that I'm okay, that I can, you know, this was a smart thing, like letting my hair be normal and still like, or just be natural and still having someone like want to make out with me is like, you know, like, oh, maybe I am okay.
Yeah. Oh, I love everything you said. And one tiny thing I want to unpack in that for the manifester, because we are starting to write a lot more content for the parents of how to raise a magnetic child. There's an article that will have already come out by this time. I forget what it's called, but it's all about teaching your child what a hell yes and a hell no is intuitively without putting all societal programming on them. And some stuff you really touched on, which is so obvious, but I think so important for the person just tuning in or the parent, that the current system of education, the current societal programming and modeling of what is good, what is popular, what is pretty, is so not okay.
Yeah.
Especially being projectors, because I could resonate so much with what you were saying. I wasn't into sports, though I was forced into them to try to feel like I fit in. Also, like I could give two shits about school. Like I've never met a projector yet that's like, I loved college. Most of them I know didn't go because they're like, I get this.
I started my blog in college because I was bored in class.
Yeah. And not to say that education's not important. Yeah. It's very important, but also recognizing the strengths of your children and letting them unfold authentically in front of you, showing you what their talents are, what they're good at, and then please go and find them expanders who are successful in this that can reflect back to them that this is where they can get their, not their worth. Their worth has to come from their own authenticity, but to show them, reflect their authenticity back to them so they can build their worth and their, more than anything, their deservingness on this planet. So thank you for saying that. Yeah. And sharing that.
What's interesting now is like this is something that's so new for me that's just come in to my thinking over the summer through therapy, through all the things I've been doing, is that, you know, I wasn't meant in my Catholic school in my small town. I didn't have all of the tools to succeed. You know, I wasn't good at sports. I didn't look how I thought I wanted to look. But for where I am now, it's like, oh, I've got all of what I have in this body and the skills that I have, the talents that I have, that's all I need to do what I need to do now. And at the time,
that's how I feel. Absolutely.
I didn't know that this career path even existed. Podcasting didn't exist.
Totally.
You know, like I didn't have expanders. Like I didn't know that what I'm doing now even was a thing. You know, it barely was a thing, but I'm just knowing that like, okay, I liken this a lot to like moving to New York, right? Like, if I often say, like, if I didn't have my phone, the technology of Google Maps, I would have never been able to move to New York. Like, I don't know how some of my friends moved to New York 10, 15 years ago before that.
He was like, even before MapQuest, like a Thomas guy.
I have no, like, I'm just like, I could
never
have
done it. Or Subway Map.
Yeah, exactly. Or moved to Detroit before I had my Garmin. Like, I was using my Garmin. Like, I could have never left East Lansing, like, without this technology. But the thing is, it doesn't matter because the technology does exist, and it doesn't matter that I wasn't good at multiplication.
Yeah, or that maybe grammar and spelling, because the technology exists.
Totally. Yeah. It's like I have all the things that I need this time around for what I'm going to do now, you know?
Yeah, and it's so good to teach that to children if those aren't their strengths. And also another thing, just the last note on all of this, because it's so important what you're saying, is to please,
please surround your child around manifestors that reflect what they look like. If media is not showing them to you, find them, seek them out and show them. If your child has seemingly a unibrow, do not ask them to go do something about it. Show them Frida and that it looks like a butterfly and a bird. Like, please, if you know, just anything that reflects your child physically, it is so important so that they don't go fully, or they have a better chance to not go fully down the rabbit hole of leaving their authenticity in order to fill the mold of societal programming of what, quote unquote, a beautiful body, a beautiful expression of a body, or a projection of expression of your look should be. Reflect what they are already looking like and what they start to unfold their expression before they get to school. And then it's very important to really show them once they are in school, when they are around nothing but mirror neurons of a lot of insecure children who are just trying to fit the mold of what they aren't authentically.
So well, mic drop. Like, that's so well said, and it makes you want to cry for some reason, because all I wanted to do was like look like an Olsen twin and
totally
look like the coolest girl in school, and I didn't, and I just kept trying to and failing and being less and less authentic as I tried.
Absolutely. I want to touch really quickly. I think you'll serve as a big expander since you've done a lot of the work and you know the work. Please tell us A, what you've manifested and what your process was and what you're working on now.
I think the biggest thing, I mean, I'm constantly trying to grow and learn and just be more of myself. And I really wanted to figure out how I could. Moving to New York was a big thing. Like, I wanted to move to New York right after college when my best friend, who you've met, moved. And it wasn't the right time for me. And then certain things just kind of aligned in my life. And it was following pings. It was like, I don't know why, but I'm going to say yes to this because it feels right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say yes to the next right action, you know, the next right opportunity. So following like what felt right. And then eventually it got me to, you know, living where I'm living and doing what I'm doing now. And then the biggest thing that happened most recently for me was being able to support myself without a full-time job.
That's huge. And will you dig into that? I know your story, but 1,000%. Will you dig into that a little bit? Because one of the biggest questions we get is how do I leave my safe 9-to-5 or my career I've had in order to follow my dream?
Yeah. And I want to talk about this more and more and more, because I had a job for 6 years and I just left that job on August 31st. The point is not about the date, that I was there for so long and I was... you get to this point where you're like, I didn't have expanders in entrepreneurship. I thought the only way to support myself was to have a 401k and benefits. And I was so scared to leave that. And I think that knowing that I was going to be okay and seeing other people doing that, knowing that it wasn't going to look the same for me. It wasn't going to be like just leaving that prematurely. It was taking my time, saving money, building that up.
A fuck you fund, being in your bridge.
I did all the things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And knowing that, like, it doesn't mean I might get a job again sometime.
Totally.
Who knows? I might want to, but it felt right. It felt like, and I think talking about the fact that like all of us support ourselves in many different ways. And when I'm so glad we're talking about this right now, because for 6 years on the podcast, like I didn't really talk about it that much, not because I was embarrassed, but because at first I felt like me having a full-time job meant that I wasn't a real author. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a real podcaster. And I don't think that at all. And I heard Elizabeth Gilbert say this thing once where she was like, she had a full-time job or a job all the way as a writer, all the way until Eat, Pray, Love came out, which was like obviously a massive success.
Julia
Roberts played her in the movie. And she was like, I did that because I didn't want to have to put the pressure on my creative work to make me money. I wanted to be able to be as free with that as possible. And that's what I was able to do. I was able to really take my time, build up this audience that I have and this community and this friend group that I have with the people who listen to Let It Out and this archive. And I've been able to learn and I've been able to build a network. That's what podcasting has done for me so much. And I've been able to start to develop my skills. And now I'm at this place where I'm honestly so, so, so grateful mm-hmm. that I've been able to do this mm-hmm. and I'm able to figure out what's next. And I didn't prematurely do it. And I think that if someone wants to do this, ask yourself why. Like, is it because that was so ego for mm-hmm, me before? Mm-hmm, it was like all in my ego of like, I just want to be a full time entrepreneur so I can say I'm a full time entrepreneur.
Totally. It's all, like, it's not cares? A core essence. Yeah. Which is exactly. not going to work out until you get your true. Yeah.
And then I got to the point where I was like, and this is my whole thing with, you know, you tell people to like look at their own patterns with manifestation. Like, my pattern is like, when I'm truly okay with where I'm at, that's when where I'm at can start to change to what I'm really wanting, you
totally.
Know?
Totally.
And when I got the job that I recently left, I wanted more than anything to live on my own. Mm-hmm. And I was living at home after college for a couple of months. And I got really comfortable living with my mom. And like those, it was only for like 3 months. And I was right at the end when I got the job and I was able to move, which is all I said I wanted for months. I was like, kind of good here with my mom. Like, maybe I'll just stay.
That's my pattern too, that I think it's so good we're touching on this, because by the time I manifest the big thing I wanted, it's like, oh, okay, well, what's next? It kind of feels like nothing.
And it was the same thing. Like, as soon as I got this, everything was in motion to move to New York. I had just like fallen in love and I had a boyfriend. I loved my apartment and I was like, oh, shoot. And then it was like, you know, the same thing of like, now I'm about to move to a new place. Like, all of the things are like, it's that's my path. Like that's how you know.
It's because so you've funny. Done, and it doesn't have to just be the work. I mean, you've expanded. You've done all of these things to literally be in not vibrational, but literally vibrational connection is meaning that you're worth exactly what you want. So when it comes through, it's like, oh, okay, cool. It's like putting on a shoe.
Yeah,
it's great and fun and all that. Yeah. But it's like, oh, cool. It's
And that the whole reason I brought this up, I lost my train of thought. But that's what happened with the job. Like a couple of months before I was leaving, I was like, wait, I really love this. I'm gonna be sad to leave this. Yeah. I think I could do both. And my boyfriend was like, you're burning out. You're insane. Like, I'm sorry. What? Yeah. So, like, luckily I was like, I was like, oh no. I had to choose. I was like, I'm either going to stop doing the podcast and go all in with this thing that I'm not really that passionate about, or I'm going to like take the unsure move.
Jump off the cliff. Yeah. And for you, cause there was a moment when we were in New York that you said, that's when I knew I had to close this portal. What did that look like for you, for the person who's like, when is that time? I don't know when that time will be.
Yeah.
It feels ambiguous.
Well, and I think I don't want to diminish the fact that like, even as I was doing it, there is a moment of like, okay, this is right. Yes, this is right.
Yeah. And
like, you know, like you have to have like one side of your brain instruct the other side of your brain. Cause that ego voice, at least for me, my ego voice sounds a lot like my mom. It wants to keep you safe, you know?
So it's something always saying it's just like, afraid.
Are you going to be okay? Yeah. Are you sure? But for me, it was just like an alignment of like, okay, I took my time. I was very, very calculated with this choice. I backed into it probably a year, mm-hmm. if not more. Like I knew what I was going to be working on the second I was done.
Fantastic.
I'm too much of a controlling person to like just kind of totally jump. So I knew exactly what I had saved up enough money.
Yeah.
I was moved to where I wanted to be. Like I would say to people wanting to make that leap, like know for yourself what those things for you that will give you the safety, the security to feel okay, to flow
and dance. That's why it's so important to tell everybody you have to have a fuck you fund. Don't just jump off that cliff or you're going to not only not manifest what you want, but you'll be very jaded to ever try it again.
For sure.
Afraid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other last little thing I want you to share, and then I'm going to get into the way that you process the work, which is different while you're in the workshops. But the last little thing I want you to share is what came through when you did jump off the cliff and fully close the portals.
So many things. I mean, I think it's still coming. I think I'm just like, the best thing is me feeling more like myself. You know, I feel like when you have a full-time job, for me, it was challenge. I had a very flexible situation, but it's hard to fully be able to follow all the pings.
Yeah.
And now being able to structure my day in a way that, and I'm still finding my footing. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, my next move and creatively and unblock, you know, some creative things I'm wanting to, the feeling of overwhelm that I'm just trying to kind of move away. I'm still kind of bringing myself out of that because I did experience some burnout this year. But I think I'm in kind of another magic dark, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I think the stuff that I really want is going to come in very soon. I'm feeling that. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling some of that sadness of like, where I am right now is is about to jump off another cliff. Yeah. It's like another unveiling of the onion.
There's grief around it. Or there's grief also when you leave that version of you behind, I find.
Yeah.
I'll have those grief moments where it's like, I miss her.
Yeah. And it's just, it's exciting. It's like, I'm learning how to be a new person. I'm learning how to be someone who's not frantic all the time, who's not answering every email. You know, things are more hectic than usual mm-hmm. all the time. Yeah. Like I'm able to have some space, like, you know, being here in LA, I'm going to be spending a lot of time alone and just like going into a shell and like creating what's next for me. And I feel like I'm very expanded and I want to get more unblocked.
It's so that it can just come through.
Totally.
I love that. And I can see where it's all coming.
Oh, thank you.
Which I'm very excited about. So in New York, you told us a really interesting thing, or you told me, us, me. We were sitting literally at like Honey Brains and you were like, this is how I actually process.
Oh, yeah.
So when you're going through the workshops or you're doing the DRE, you weren't connecting fully, or you couldn't go deep enough into the hypnosis. So you found sort of your own way. I was wondering if you could unpack that a little bit for the person who really resonates with journaling and NLP.
I'm really glad that I told you that because I was honestly a little bit scared and nervous. Mm-hmm. I was like, I hope Lacey doesn't like,
oh my God,
think
my
I'm
only
wrong.
Objective is that everyone's manifesting.
I know, which I know about you now. So I'm so happy that I did talk about it. But for me, I'm someone who's so in my head. I struggle to be in my body. Mm-hmm. And so doing the DREs and doing, you know, in meditation, it's okay for me because I do TM. So I know I can just, okay, I come back.
Same.
I come back. Yeah. But with the DRE, I would find myself judging, which, you know, you say so beautifully in what your support with people, that there's no need to judge the experience, just let the experience happen. But I was so going out into my head and thinking about my to-do list and thinking about other things that I felt like it wasn't as potent for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was really helpful was, as someone who is visual in the sense of like writing forces me to be really present because it slows down my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't write as fast as I can speak or mm-hmm. as fast as I can think. I can't be like over here, I'm in my nice meadow. And then I'm like in New York in my to-do list. And then I'm anxious about another thing. And then I'm 5 years in the past of when I piss someone off, you know, I'm like actually writing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like peaceful. And so, and it still might be chaotic. It might be deep. It might be really, really heavy, but it's present.
Mm-hmm.
It's single pointed focus.
Yeah.
And so doing two things have been really helpful for me. Taking your process into my life has been journaling out kind of what you teach in the DREs mm-hmm. and actually writing out where I went.
Like long form.
Long form.
Yeah.
Like actually writing it out has been so helpful. And then in my therapy, I do with my therapist NLP, which is like essentially someone, I was sharing this with you earlier, it's someone taking me through one-on-one mm-hmm. my version of reprogramming
mm-hmm.
and like going into my kind of childhood, what happened when I in reparent or something that I've worked in. Doing your work has been great to take to therapy and
which
make
I
my therapy
always
deeper.
Recommend.
Yeah.
You know, work closely with a therapist or do your process and then take it into your therapist and process it because you'll actually have a poignant focus when you go in, which
exactly.
is what I personally do. Like
exactly.
I'll go like, God, this thing's triggering me. I'll go through the DRE, daily reprogramming, do the prompts. And I obviously resonate with the hypnosis. So I'll do the hypnosis and I'll be like, oh my God, it's because I don't feel deserving of that when I was this young. Well, fuck it. Now I'm taking it to my therapist. And we're going to do EMDR on it. And let's get to the root. And
it's gone. Exactly. It's like you can hit the ground running.
Totally.
Yeah.
So that's where I love that you are able to combine the two. So for the person who's in, like, let's say that they're processing reparent day one right now, or they're processing the DRE for a trigger that came up. So they're doing the daily reprogramming exercise. What would be the prompts or the tips you would give them if they wanted to take it in a long form journaling experience?
Yeah, I think doing the experience and then asking, we so often go through life not really knowing how we're feeling or lying about how we're feeling, even to ourselves. Like,
or like floating above it, just not even able to anchor into it.
Yeah. So just starting with, and I believe if you ask yourself a good question, you'll get a good answer from your intuition. And that's what NLP is all about. It's asking a pointed, directed question to get the answer that you're looking for.
Mm.
And so if you ask yourself, how are you feeling? Why are you? And then why?
Mm-hmm.
Why? why?
That's what I get to the bottom. Keep going. Yep. You got an answer. Go further.
Yep. And then, you know, so this is kind of maybe even separate from like the unblocked work, but a question I often ask, you know, when I'm like teaching workshops about journaling is like, what can you absolutely not write about? Mm-hmm. Like, where do you not want to go? Mm-hmm. And that's probably the corner of your mind mm-hmm. that you probably need to
go. That's the one to hit. Yeah.
And it doesn't make it any less annoying.
Yeah.
And the world would be so different. It's not the world we live in if we came here and growth happened from like success and
totally.
Happiness. But like,
it's from pain.
We grow from failure. Yeah. We grow from like these things that we want to address in our lives. And like what your work does so well is clarity. You know, it gives us clarity on like, what was that? And why does that make me feel that way?
Totally.
And my biggest tool, like before your work was journaling and was, you know, but again, with all of this, that's what I love about like figuring out your patterning
totally,
and knowing what
totally.
works for you and tailoring it.
Find your success. It's like intuitive eating.
Exactly.
Even if you're buying reparents so that you actually understand what I'm teaching about it for manifestation and going, oh, if this isn't resonating with me, her process of working with my subconscious, I'm going to find, it's like intuitive eating. What does work? Like Russian roulette. Is it this? Is it that? And we're going to come up with more options to give people more tools in the next workshop. But I think it's so important to be like, what's taking me there? I have this guideline, so I have something to work with, but how do I go deep into the subconscious and shift this block?
Yeah. And like, honestly, with all of the things, like, and I know you feel this way too, I think of wellness as like a smorgasbord, right?
Totally.
It's like a buffet. It's like not just wellness, but personal growth, therapy, all these modalities, like take it all. Like I look at it as a buffet and intuitively eat in the buffet. And trust me, I've been dogmatic in the buffet before. Yeah. And I've been like, well, no, I just got to go for the potatoes and I'm only at the potatoes and I gorge on potatoes. And that's not a way to be. Like take a little bit of free and native and a little bit of NLP and a little bit of this and a sprinkle of that. And then tomorrow it might be all this. And like, I love the DREs. Like I love it. It calms me and I love it, but I also journal and I also do NLP and it's like we're constantly growing and changing and seasonally and
that's what it's, you're building a toolbox.
Exactly.
So you can pull this tool out that and you can combine the tools and this. And I tell people like combine Jenna's rabbit hole with manifestation and watch what happens. You really want to watch magic happen? Combine Kundalini with this manifestation. Yeah. Like it's so important to have the tools we know how to work with when a certain trigger comes up or a certain block we're dealing with that we're trying to get through. There's stuff everywhere, but it's intuitive eating. It's knowing what your body responds to and what it's asking for. More importantly, what your subconscious and feelings respond to and what they're asking for.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, that's why all my stuff is called Let It Out. It's like, you know, I tend to be someone who's so in my head and not in my body. And I hold on to these feelings and I need to get them out. And when I changed, my stuff used to be called The Wellness Wonderland when I first started, and I changed the name to Let It Out because I realized that wellness isn't just, you know, Kundalini and green juice. Well, you know, again, love those things as much as the next guy. It's also about your career and it's also about your relationships and it's also about creativity and aesthetics and your home and the amount that you travel and how you feel and how you eat and
family. That's holistic.
It's all of the things.
Yeah. That's the whole connection, the circle, the whole thing. Holistic. I love that.
Yeah.
Tell us about Let It Out and tell us about podcasting, because you were really helpful in us when we were starting the podcast. So you were like, wait, I can create a model where I can teach people or work with them on how to start a podcast. And it's incredibly successful. Tell us all about it for the person who's sitting there and they're like, maybe podcasting is for me.
So I have been podcasting for a million years / 2013, which I always say pre-serial, whenever a lot of people were listening to podcasts like they are now, which is such a welcomed phenomenon. I think in the age of social media and sound bites and stories, it's nice to sit down with someone for a really, really long time and just let something unfold. I think something special happens about a half an hour, 45 minutes in, where it happened to me today, where you forget your recording and you can just be people with each other. And so I love doing this so much. I have met so many people through podcasting, not only through the guests, but also through the listeners, that I really believe that podcasting is the new networking. And I was getting so many questions about a year ago when I was had been doing this for about 5 years. How do you start a podcast? I want to start a podcast, not just because I'd been doing it for a long time, just because podcasting itself was becoming really trendy.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people wanted to start podcasts and saw the value in it. And so I was like sending these really long emails that I would take a lot of time with writing all of the equipment that I used and all of the this that I used. And I was like doing it so often. I was like, I need to make myself a Google Doc. Mm-hmm. So I just like can be a little quicker about this. And then I was getting on the phone with people and getting coffee with people. And I was like, I'm spread so thin. Maybe I can like make this some sort of like manifestation advising, podcast advising. And so I started to help other people with ideas start podcasts. And then you were an expander to me of like, you know, I was almost really put off by online courses.
Same. I was so put off by them.
Yeah. And I was just kind of like, and everyone was kind of telling me you should make one on journaling or you should make one on this or that. And I just didn't really feel like I put everything I had in this, you know, about journaling. And I don't know, you know, I wasn't inspired to make anything. And then I was like, oh, I actually weirdly do know something about podcasting. Mm-hmm. And the thing for me was I get really overwhelmed by the technology of things or all the moving parts of something that can be as big as putting out a podcast. Like I was like, how do I get it to iTunes? How do I this? Yeah. How do I that? And when I started, I had a podcast advisor.
Oh, wow.
My boyfriend at the time from college was someone who was good at technology. And when I said I wanted to have a podcast, he was like, he helped me. Mm. He helped me figure out all this. And I'm so grateful for that. Like he helped me figure out all this stuff I didn't want to learn and figure out myself. And so I was able to focus on the part that I really loved, which was interviewing and curating the guests. And eventually I learned how to do all that. We broke up. And so I learned how to edit and I learned how to outsource and I learned how to do all of this. And so I put it into this 8-module course where I recorded these lovely audios where I give people all the information from naming it and coming up with a concept, getting it to iTunes, interviewing, marketing it, eventually monetizing it. And then also I interviewed, that's like the worst part, because then I interviewed 12 other podcasters and they open up the kimono.
Amazing.
And tell everything that they do, which is very different from what I do. And then I didn't want people to, much like you say, not to leave a manifestor behind. Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave a podcaster behind. I didn't want anyone to buy this workshop and then just be like a thing that was on their computer it goes away. So I created, there's a contest element where people can submit to me a clip or a full baked podcast, and I choose one to air on the Let It Out
station.
Awesome.
So cool. Very cool. It's kind of like how I built this, how they, you know, showcase really cool new entrepreneurs at the end. I love that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We should do that with people who have manifested.
Totally.
Because it really inspires other people. Like, this will happen. You're on the right track. You're worth it. Yeah, it's a really great. I love that you did that. And where can we find it? And when can we find it next?
LetApodcastOut.club. If people are listening right now to this live, it's available till the 28th. And then I'm doing like one last live version of it. And then if you go to LetApodcastOut.club, it'll be there.
Great. Excellent. And you can sign up for the waiting list when the next one comes out.
Exactly.
And come in. And also tell us about your book for the person who hasn't read it, which I feel is very few out there.
Thank you so much. It's 55 journaling prompts. It's personal essays from me and journaling prompts everywhere from getting organized to feeling your feelings to relationships, kind of everything in between. And
And journal prompts are definitely a thing that everybody's interested in.
Yeah.
We see it. It's like a really high engagement.
It's nice to get to those corners of your mind that you won't go to on your own.
I love the
dusty corners.
Yeah, the ones that, it's like you said, where maybe you might not want to look at them or you just don't have the instruction of where to go.
Yeah, like if it was a house, it's like the attic where you're putting all the stuff that you don't want to see and you'll deal with later and eventually you have to kind of deal with.
I love that. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy we had you today, Katie. We're so grateful.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have to do it again, or I'll have to be on yours next year, something
yes,
with a new something.
Yes,
we can
yes,
talk
yes.
about like a poignant something.
Yes, I know what I want it
to
do? Be.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh,
good. Can I say it here?
Yeah, of course.
I want to talk about style and masculine style and how that affects how we think and feel and how authentic we are. And
do you want to get, I mean, we'll save that for your podcast
because
that's actually, it'll be really great engagement for somebody or for somebody to engage with who is totally unfamiliar with that.
Cool. So that's such a helpful expander and mentor. And I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I love Free and Native. I love your work. I love your team.
We love you. We're so grateful. Projector to projector.
Yes. Yes. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is the Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, the Motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.